It's time to talk about the outdoors in South Alabama. Hunting, fishing, and getting outside along the Great Gulf Coast. It's time to take it outside with FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. With reports, stories, how-to information, and Dr. Bill's Marine Forecast. Here's Sean Sullivan and Mike Ward.
And away we go, FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Glad to have y'all here. This weekend, waiting. Yeah, no joke. That's the sound. Yeah, the crying, more the crying than the goblin. As we got a kind of mixed bag today, like we do this time of year. We're going to start talking, of course, about turkey season. We're now into week two of turkey season, and this is, if you look at the stats, and I don't know if they put it out this year. I don't think there's one out this year. But the one from 2017 is the last one I have from the state. It's called their Full Fans and Sharp Spurs Report, put on by Steve Barnett, biologist, game biologist with DCNR, Alabama Wildlife and Freshwater Fisheries. And it shows a bunch. I love it because I love information and stats about hunting. And you break it apart. It shows regions, you know, how they have it split up in regions and how many turkeys are killed or estimated back then.
And they're wrong.
Yeah, because they don't have the data. And that's, once again, let's remind you, and like the ads play on this show, reminding you, just like with deer, you need to use Game Check and game check your turkeys.
That's right.
What we're doing here, not only do you need to fill it out on your license if you're somebody got a paper license, but you've got to go and register it in Game Check. What they're trying to do is give us some accurate information. And turkeys, more than anything, so many of us are concerned with the population of turkeys in Alabama leveling out or declining, that information is important for the science out there. Believe me, this at the top of this heap is Chuck Sykes, Director of Alabama Marine Resources, Alabama Freshwater and Wildlife and Freshwater Fisheries. We'll get to marine resources here in a second. He is the turkey killingest, lovingest guy ever.
He does.
So
he's one of us, John.
Yeah.
He likes everything, just like me and you do.
So you know where the top of the stack is. This information is not being gathered by somebody who wants to keep you from hunting. This is being gathered by somebody who wants to do the best job so we have more turkeys. This guy, and he wants to have more turkeys to kill them. Just like we do. Okay. So use Game Check and do all that. But that Full Fans and Sharp Spurs report had showed the peak weekend for gobbling, I think, is the third or fourth weekend. But the peak week for killing is this weekend.
Yeah.
Not opening weekend. It's the second weekend. Now, that was in the 2017. Now, that varies year to year, weather to weather. But it's just kind of interesting to break down because they have the system with the state that you can volunteer. If you go to Outdoor Alabama, you could be part of their group where you report how many gobbles you heard, how many jakes did you see, how many gobblers did you see, that kind of information. They start putting that data in to try to get an idea of what trends are in the state. And but what had come out of that is a discussion of the second week of turkey season being the killingest of the weekends.
How about that? You know, I think I saw that report, John, but
I
know it's flawed because, like in Marengo County, I think there was, if it's the same report, I want to say it was 70-something turkeys reported for the season. And I know there's more than 70-something turkeys killed in Marengo County.
Sure. What they're doing, though, is you can extract – what you can do from that is – compare it with the other regions. You can say 70 is flawed, but if it says in that region 70 and down in my region it's 35, you can say those numbers aren't real, but probably the percentage of turkey harvest is.
And it is the law to register your deer. So you need to do that.
And turkeys, too.
I mean, I'm sorry.
Both of them.
Both of them. You got to do both of them, yeah.
All right. So here I'm looking at
on deer, you got to register your doe. Now, do you have to register your hen?
Huh? You don't. Yeah, you've lost me here on the show. So, whatever we're talking about to start the show, we're talking about. I just thought it was interesting that the and I tell you what, I have found it. I Googled it here, and because I have a paper copy sitting in my office at the house, but I have a online copy. If you just look for Alabama Full Fan Sharp Spurs, it's the 2017 report. And it shows gobblers heard per 10 hours hunted, turkey observations. Kind of interesting, though. Breakdown for the different parts of the state and, kind of when they peak. But, this is supposed to be the killingest weekend. And for that reason, let me go ahead and just divulge to you that I'm not here. We did this earlier in the week because right now I'm at one of the SOAs in the state. I got drawn this year, so I am up.
That is awesome.
So hopefully next week's show.
An SOA, let everybody know what
SOA is. Special Opportunity Area. So okay. I put in for the lottery draw. I've been putting in a couple years now. I got drawn this year, and I got drawn for turkey. I haven't gotten drawn for deer. Didn't get drawn for the duck things, but I got drawn for turkey this year. So I'll give you all a report.
So where are you going?
Be at Cedar Creek. Okay. Which is up north of Camden,
okay,
along the Alabama River. And I've been studying the area. It looks real good. And hopefully by this point, I'm sitting down next to a tree right now listening to one blow my hat off. So,
well, when you say study, I saw your map, Sean. Sean goes into detail. He draws the map out. He's got every spot marked, every green field marked, every trail marked, every place that a turkey would possibly want to roost or strut. He goes into detail. So if you don't kill a turkey there,
it's my fault. Well, it's a turkey's fault.
You have to quit. Well, I've got maps.
Listen, I am at fault for not killing turkeys. We'll get to that. Go ahead and, you know, I divulge this, number one, because it's good to confess to your sins, first of all.
Yeah.
Second of all, maybe this helps other people. We have talked over the years that the people that talk to me say they've never missed a turkey. I don't know how much turkey hunting they've done.
I don't think they hunt much.
But it's been a long time since I had.
Yeah.
Until last weekend. So on Sunday morning, I went. Now, interesting, too, wasn't a lot of goblin. Even though Sunday morning was pretty, I thought for sure, you know, we'd hear some goblin, and I did. I got put on a – went into an area blind, piece of property I hadn't been on before, but a parcel's around where my friends are. They said, just go in there, go up this road. There's a creek somewhere back there. They roost along the creek. They'll gobble.
Yeah.
That's what the intel had. So I went in, and a good buddy let me hunt his place. So I went in there, heard two different birds, but not real fired up, probably 12 or 15 gobbles total, most of those on the limb. Hit the ground, probably three more gobbles on the ground. Long story short, just a reminder here, y'all, and I almost completed what I should do, but when I was young, I remember somebody who was around me when I first started turkey hunting. He said, Sean, he said, when you've made that last call and you sat there just as long as you think it can take for that turkey to get to you. Now, because it's a situation where he wasn't blowing the woods up.
Right.
I hadn't heard a gobble in 45 minutes or so. But I remember, when you do that last call, maybe even sometimes I'll put up, if I'm using a slate call, I put the call up. I may still keep a mouth call in, but I'll put the call up. I mean, that's almost like I'm not calling anymore. Right. I'm finished. You know, I called like three times that morning, my last call. You know, he always said, sit. He said, when you can't stand it, old timer told me, then you sit another 30 minutes.
Yeah.
Well, I sat for 23.
It's kind of my philosophy.
It is. So but you sit all day. You sit, Mike stays with those birds all day. So with 23 of the 30 minutes that I was supposed to sit that I've done my whole life since back then, I got itchy because I started thinking about all the stuff back home we had to do and stuff. I went to get up.
I got to get him to come or I got to go.
Yeah. Well, I had given up on calling. I was supposed to get up at 8:30 by my rule. And at 8:23, I rolled from a sitting position to my knee, and he and I were looking at each other at that point. Now, in younger days, I had walked into him as I was leaving. It wasn't that. I rolled up on my knee and panicked, you know, as much as probably the best word for it, and panicked. I wasn't completely falling apart, but I rushed shooting. I missed a turkey. I missed a turkey at about 30.
Now, was he standing still or was he?
Essentially, yeah, he had stopped.
Yeah.
And there's a few trees, but no reason to miss.
Yeah.
I don't know if my shot patterning actually went in the same county I was firing it from. Because when I replayed it, I went over there to check after the, went to check for feathers or pellets in the trees where you're standing. No sign that there was even anything in the shotgun shell I shot. He took off like a 747. So, yes, so I'll put myself on the board as a swing and a miss for season 2019. It's been a long, long time, but I've done it again.
So when you started to get up, got on your knee, which direction was it coming from? Out in front of you or to the right or left or back?
He was kind of coming off my right shoulder.
Would you have seen him if you'd have been sitting there looking ahead?
Yeah.
You would have seen him?
And I wouldn't have rushed a shot if I was leaned back in my seat.
Yeah.
If I'd have waited for another 35 seconds, 35 seconds, he would have probably stepped into view because the height I had from being on my backside, on my butt, versus my knee wasn't that much different.
Right.
He was coming up a ridge. Now, all these things play into it. He hadn't gobbled in a long time.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean anything, y'all.
No.
He hadn't gobbled in a long time. It was all pine straw, no leaves in there, and it had been wet. He made no noise.
Yeah.
No noise. And never heard him drum, anything. I was on a finger of a ridge that was going off into a creek bottom, and he was coming up that ridge. So he had done his stuff down there when he had gobbled, and he finally decided to come check me out. And he was coming to get my hip pocket.
Yeah.
And I rolled up, and I looked at him. In retrospect, this is one thing. Every situation is different. In my situation, I rushed it for no reason, playing it back in my head. He didn't see me. Yeah. Believe it or not, there's sometimes that you just get lucky. A tree's there. They're not looking that way or whatever. The motion of me rolling from my backside onto my knee, now that I play it back, he didn't see me.
Yeah.
But I was so sure in my head. I think all turkey hunters get this.
He's getting ready to fly, take off, you know.
Right.
He saw me. I got to draw down on him quick. Yeah.
As I've always joked about, if I ever had a turkey hunting TV show, it may be one of the more boring. I mean, I've done a couple episodes, and I killed some, Jason Smith and I killed one on TV and did all that. But even in that
that's
one.
That's hard to do.
Even in that one, it was all I could do to let them roll footage.
Yeah.
I'm a South Alabama turkey hunter. We get gobbler in range. We kill them.
Yeah.
And, you know, so in that case, I got the kind of, you better get him now, you know. And I missed. So it's all on me. It's all Indian, not arrow. I missed turkey. And I'm here to just go ahead and, you know, lay it out there. So I may
everybody,
swing and a miss.
If you hunt enough, whether it's deer or turkey or whatever it is, you're going to miss from time to time. I mean, it's just the way it is.
And you get that thought after the turkey flies off. You know, you, like I said, I saw a miracle that day. I saw a dead turkey fly away.
Yeah.
And it's amazing. You know, you already picture him riding in the truck with you. And then that
and
that,
showing them off to your buddies and all
turkey,
that. Yeah.
And that turkey's flying away. So, it's humbling, but it's if you hunt long enough, it's going to happen to you. Definitely not the first time I've missed one, but it's been a while. But, yeah, that bird just the lessons there is he didn't gobble a bunch after he hit the ground. Now, right now, this weekend, it may be completely different. What about you?
Patience. Patience is what kills turkeys now.
That is correct.
And, John, I can't tell you how many times I've sat there for 3 or 4 hours at a time, and that's usually what I'll do, and just say, I'm going to wait 5 more minutes, and I'm getting up. You know, I'm just going to – I've been here for 4 hours, and nothing's going to happen. And in that 5 minutes,
when it happens.
10 minutes, here he comes.
And if I would have obeyed my own rule
– yeah.
I would have killed that turkey because I'd have been – and I still should have killed that turkey after rolling to my knee, but I rushed my shot. But if you had come in while I'm seated with my gun on my knee, the old kind of command control structure in my brain on how to kill a turkey would have just played out.
Yeah.
I interrupted that.
Yeah.
You know, and got rushed. Yeah, because at 8:30 I was supposed to get up. It was 8:23 I went to get up.
You know? I don't like putting time on turkey hunting. You know, I just don't.
I have to say
every turkey's different, and if I think there's a chance he's coming, I'm going to
see. I hadn't heard the bird in the longest time, and the last time I heard him gobble, he seemed to be going away, and he's across the property line. I couldn't chase him. So.
But then there might be another one coming from the other direction that hadn't said a word.
Absolutely right.
You know, so the longer you can sit there and be patient,
you're right.
One will show up possibly. You know, but God, I can't tell you. I mean, there's been quite a few times that done the same thing as you. And get up, and just as soon as I get up, golly, there's one behind me coming in. And, you know, I've flushed him out or something. So just be patient. Sit there as long as you can.
Great advice.
As long as you know there's turkeys around.
Yeah, and this is one of those situations where I did, right? I mean, he had gobbled on the limb. He had gobbled a couple times to me when he was on the ground, and then he didn't gobble to me anymore.
Yeah.
But you know when he's gobbled to you, then he knows you're there.
Yeah.
Now, and the idea is what the old turkey hunters say, that is a great, great axiom to work off of when you think, why isn't he coming to me right now? You know what? If you're a very good turkey caller, you're just another hen.
Yeah.
There's other hens out there. You're just another hen. He might get to you after a while.
But
if you're not the closest hen, you're just another hen.
That's right.
It's tough for us to think about in our human emotions that, you know, he should come right to us because we're calling. Well, there's hens out there too. And you're just another hen.
That's right. And they can hear so far, Sean. You know, a gobbler can hear a hen yip a long, long ways.
Yep.
So there might be some that, I mean, you couldn't even hardly hear gobble that morning.
Right.
You know, that might hear you yip, and he's just taking his time getting to you.
He's
you
got
know?
Some other stuff to do, but he's put you on the list.
That's right.
He's going to come see you. So what are you hearing over at your place?
It's slow. I heard three turkeys gobble Saturday morning.
Okay.
And they were off the property.
Okay.
And we didn't do any good at all Saturday. Sunday morning, we sat for a long time, you know, nothing. And then we went Sunday morning, heard about 6 or 8 gobble, went to another place, heard about 6 or 8 gobble, and got on 3 of those. And once they flew down, they gobbled like once or twice, and we stayed there for like 4 hours, like, you know, just hoping one's going to come. Nothing. So we hunted around the rest of the day, and nothing. You know, never heard another one gobble or nothing. So far for me, it's been slow except for Dylan getting one opening day of youth season. So
they're henned up right now at your place?
Yeah, they are. They are henned up bad.
Okay.
Sure are.
Well, the nice thing is that eventually that ends and things get back to where the good days are towards the end of the season, right? Yes. We'll talk more about that. We'll come back. Also, on the fishing front, I got some bad news and some questions, and we'll get to that when we return right here on FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5, and it is FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors on this Saturday. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward, glad to have you along. Hey, I got a question for you. So, I'm talking about shooting turkeys and something. There's a guest I hope we get on the show soon. And I gotta wait to tell you who it is until I get it booked. But maybe he'll be on soon. He's gonna be a lot of fun for turkey hunters. We get this guy on the show with us going forward. But the question I've got here is something I've heard him do and I've heard you do in the turkey woods, and that is fighting purr.
Yeah.
The fighting purr.
First part of season.
Yeah. Well, he does it.
Seems to work pretty good. Now, the latter part of season does not work as good for me on the fighting purr.
Okay, but you do this. I want you to kind of break down how you do this. Now, you know, this is not your – it's going to be your one call. I mean
– no.
The Yelp is your one call, but I've heard Mike do this over the years with some success. When
really good success.
Getting birds that are gobbling and hung up to go ahead and break and come in.
Yes.
And what you're doing is you're mimicking, I mean, the same way that we're rattling antlers, you know, to get a buck to
same
come in
thing.
And check it out, you're doing...
fighting purrs. Taking two boxes.
Push buttons.
Push button boxes and making it just, you know, sound like two turkeys fighting. And when you've got
and it's an aggressive purr.
It's real. You know, it's really just really getting after.
And y'all can
it.
Y'all Google it. YouTube. There's a bunch of.
Yeah, it don't sound like that. But anyway.
No, you do a fantastic job. Yeah. I tried to do it with two push buttons. I could never make it sound like you did.
Yeah, but you know, if you got several turkeys in the area that's gobbling, you know, 300-400 yards away from you. Boy, a lot of times you get that going, especially when the hens are really yipping and the gobblers are gobbling good, and you get that going, I mean, it just fires them up. I mean, they'll leave the hens and come to you.
Yeah, that's what's wild is what you, in certain cases.
Yes.
Not all the time. It shouldn't be your go-to.
I don't use it all the time.
You don't use it all the time. It's not like your go-to everyday call.
No.
It's not that. But in these certain situations where those gobble, they'll gobble, but they're not coming. They're giving you what I call the courtesy gobble.
Yeah.
They hear you, but they're with hens. They're not coming. Sometimes this gets them to break free and come to you, to come in there and whip somebody's butt.
That's right. You know, it's just like you were talking about a while ago. Sometimes you yip once or twice and then don't yip no more for a very long time,
right.
30 minutes or so, and then you might cluck or yip a little bit. But sometimes... I mean, if the hens are really yipping and the gobblers are really gobbling, I mean, you just get on fire with them, too. You know, you're yipping every breath just about and clucking and purring. And, I mean, you get to fighting purrs. I mean, you just really get active.
You're mimicking.
I mean, sometimes you get after it, you know. But a lot of times when things are quiet and there's not much going on, you just yip a little bit, you know, a few times and cluck, purr a little bit, and just be quiet for a long time.
Yeah, that's
so it just depends on the situation. That's what's so fun about turkey hunting is that every hunt is different.
Well, and that's what I was going to add to this mix is why I mentioned that guy that may be on the show. What he does with it, and I've seen it work. It didn't work every time they did it, but sometimes. So they have two guys hunting. One guy's videoing. One guy's hunting.
Yeah.
Okay. They shoot a gobbler, and they immediately go to fight and purr if there are other gobblers in the area.
Yeah.
There's the big boom of the shotgun. But they start fighting, purring, and maybe one guy starts cutting real hard on a yelper, and it's like those turkeys forgot a shotgun went off.
Yeah.
Especially if they're not right there in front of you. You know, they're nearby. They do that, and on a couple of occasions, one of those other gobblers, after they've shot, there's one flopping.
Yeah.
They hand the gun off to the other guy, and the other guy took the camera. Fighting, purr. Guess what? Here comes another gobbler.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
after a boom.
Yeah.
And here they come.
Yeah, I've seen that happen. And I've seen it on TV a fair amount of times where, you know, they might
these
be
guys
four
were
or five or six of turkeys, gobblers come in together and they shoot one of them. And then, you know, they let them go off a little bit and start yapping again. They come right back.
Yeah. And you know, from what I've seen in places, like when I, one time I hunted Texas, I could have probably done that every hunt in Texas.
Yeah.
Those were easy. But these guys are doing it in Alabama on public land.
Yeah.
And it didn't work every time. Just depending on the situation. But it was just interesting. I thought about it, how they were using fight and purr and you know, how it's working for them.
That's why I've got a turkey vest, and it's just loaded up with different calls, because every day is a different day, you know. But I use that fighting purr almost every time I go hunting.
Okay.
You know,
and how do you do it? Remind
early,
folks,
especially early in the morning. I don't do it later on in the day too much if things are quiet, but in the morning, if, you know, if there's crows are really crowing good and turkeys are gobbling good, then I'll do it. But if it's calm, mm-hmm. you know, the crows ain't crowing and the gobbler's not gobbling, the hen's not yapping, I won't do that then.
Right.
But if it's, you know, a lot of activity in the morning, yes. And, buddy, it's worked. I've had them just run by me just about coming to it.
No, tell folks, and once again, how you do it with two push – what do you use?
Two push-button calls.
Because I know that I got – what just, I got is the
– just going – you know.
Because Night and Hail makes a fighting purr that's a one unit that you twist back and forth.
Yeah,
and I didn't get the – and somebody probably can run it better than me.
I've never used it.
It didn't work great for me, but you use two individual
– I use – Night and Hail,
but they're push button boxes.
Push button boxes.
Mike's got one in each hand, y'all. When he does this,
yes, and I got a call in my mouth mm-hmm. too. So I yep a little bit while I'm doing that.
Yeah.
You know, and it just fires them up, man. I'm telling you, I remember several trips I've been and used that, and I'm telling you, I see the turkeys out there with hens, and I start doing that, and they absolutely leave the hens and come running to me. I mean, running to me.
But once again, just remember what Mike's saying. You don't go when there's no noise happening, and all of a sudden, I mean, you got to kind of match what's going on around you. But in those situations where those turkeys are vocal, they're doing it, they're just not coming, that may be the little thing that tips the balance in your favor.
Absolutely. You know, talking about the hunting this past weekend and all too, Sean, that this is what, I mean, I've had lots of friends I've talked to over the week that's killed turkeys. But most of them said that they're gobbling, and it happened to me, they're gobbling on the roost.
Right.
You know, and when
just
they fly
told you,
down, you know, when they fly down, they're not gobbling much. Now, usually that's because they're with hens, and there's no reason to gobble anymore. When they fly down, they got hens, there's no more reason for them to call trying to get hens come to them. So I assume that's what majority of it is, and probably in about a week or two is going to be good hunting.
Yeah, absolutely.
The hens are going to start leaving, nesting. We all thought it was going to be early this year, but mm-hmm. I don't think it's too early yet.
No, and we'll get the report on next week's show more about that. All right, we're going to come back. We're going to shift gears. Be joined by Director of Alabama Marine Resources, Scott Bannon. Some saltwater fishing questions. There's a bunch of them out there. You might have heard some rumors this week. We'll go, like we do every time, to the horse's mouth. I'm not calling him a horse, but to the head honcho. There you go. Be right back. Right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan and Mike Ward, glad to have you along. And we mentioned we'd check in. You've heard the rumors maybe this week and some of the questions around possible regulation changes that we've talked in the past with Scott Bannon about. And then the rumors this week about some other things. So we'll bring him back on the show. Joining us, Director of Alabama Marine Resources, Scott Bannon. Thanks for being on.
Oh, it's always a pleasure, guys.
Let's do this rapid fire because I know you got a lot of stuff going on this morning. Let's start off with what's going on right now with these proposed changes, flounder and speckled trout. Can you run through those? Have decisions? People told me that the decisions have already been made. Can you tell
sure.
me yes or no?
The answer is no. The decisions have not been made. We have had four different public meetings, and we have one more public meeting that is geared towards our charter fleet, and that's going to be March 27th, and that'll be our final planned meeting. If there's a group or somebody that would like to have another meeting, we can do that. We can schedule one more. But then after that meeting, our staff will get together. We'll develop some recommendations based on the assessments and what the public has provided at these meetings. It's been great input. People have been very reasonable in their discussions and very concerned, as we are, with where the status is of these two fisheries, flounder and specs. And so it's going to be a tougher decision on the flounder. The trout, I think, will be something that everybody will be in agreement with, because we've had some very favorable discussions on that. But we'll make the recommendations in mid-April to the advisory board, who makes the final decision on May the 4th.
Okay, like we did last time, break it in two here. First of all, flounder, and talking to people since you've been on the show with us, people seem to nod in agreement that, hey, something's got to be done with flounder. We got real issues. I haven't heard a lot of pushback, at least in my peer group, on, you know, possibility of changes for flounder length limits. And you mentioned that it really wasn't creel limit did much good because people aren't catching limits of flounder anyway, right?
That's correct. That's correct. And with flounder in particular, we do have a commercial fishery, and so that's probably a little more of a challenge to make some adjustments.
Yeah, how are you going to adjust them? Is it going to be commiserate with how the recreational guys are adjusted?
Yes, we're looking at this as a multi-pronged approach that no one user group needs to carry the burden. So we're going to make some management changes on both sides of the house, and potentially will impact some of the charter folks, but that's a much smaller fishery for them. One of the concerns that was brought up is we do have Gulf flounder and Southern flounder. They are two different species, and so there's some concerns with size limit changes that may affect that. So we're going back and reviewing some of that information, and that came about because of the public meetings, that there was a concern for that.
Scott, on the commercial versus recreational vision, the amount of fish caught in by commercial versus recreation, what's the ratio there?
Well, I don't have those numbers in front of me, but it is much higher. The commercial fishery does take a lot more fish, and but they've also seen over the years the decline. They are in agreement that there is a concern that we have to make some management changes. And so they've experienced the exact same thing, reduced catches and a concern for where it goes in the future.
Is there a best bet right now, what we're looking at, that change will be length limit? Is that what you're thinking? Versus
most likely with that, we'll have a length limit and a seasonal closure that will apply to both commercial and recreational fishermen, especially we're looking really hard at November when those fish make a run to the Gulf and when they're spawning. If we can leave them alone for that month, and we seem to have some support from the commercial fishermen, that would be a very valid management effort, is to leave them alone during that month, even though that's a pretty high month for them. But if we leave it alone across the board for commercial and recreational, and again, we'll probably bump the size limit a little bit, but we still need to look at do we put a catch limit or something on the commercial side of the house? That's probably the detail that's much harder to work through.
Well, if they're catching more, although we'll have to do this in the show when we have more time, talk about that in depth. I want to jump now to speckled trout, because I thought we had a pretty wide-ranging discussion about that last time you were on the show, and then this last week I've been inundated with text and people asking me. They said, hey, I heard that it's already done and it's a 5-fish limit and no fish over 22 inches. Can you answer that?
The answer is no, we have not made a determination, and but those have been some of the discussions that we do a slot limit. But if we do a slot limit, we will do one oversize. So you will be allowed a trophy fish. That allows tournament to have some good opportunities.
But you had told us last time. Yeah, you're right. But you had told us last time, though, you didn't think that made as much of a difference. I was one that, you know, said, hey, on my boat, unless we're in a tournament or we're mounting a fish, we turn the big breeders back. But sure, you made an argument that may not have as much impact going forward on the stock as moving the minimum length limit up a couple inches.
The minimum length is definitely the best management tool. So that will be the most likely change we make, is moving that. But there has been a tremendous amount of support for that slot limit, because even though it is a smaller impact, those bigger fish over 22 inches, the females hold a lot of eggs, and so the anglers have really been supportive of that, and it is an excellent management tool. It just does not provide as much effect, but there's the possibility that a combination of those two things really builds that fishery much faster.
But and, you say combination, though, you could narrow that slot. My worry would be, and you know, I'm one of those guys on board, I don't want to kill big fish. What worries me, if the upper limit is 22 inches and the lower limit comes up, you know, significantly, it is a very narrow slot where, I mean, well, you know, how many fish do you find in between 16 and 22? You know, you may be in a day that's all, you know, outside that slot.
Oh, right now, our data shows that actually most of the fish kind of fall in that area. That again, that's from the surveys, mm-hmm. which misses some people that go to their private ramps and private docks. And the charter fishery is a little bit different in that respect. But again, we don't have to make as drastic of a change in trout. But I'm at some meetings, have been at some meetings this past week with other states, and they're having the same concerns. We had discussions about trout and flounder across the Gulf.
So it's
mainly
still
due to effort.
Okay, so it's still being discussed. People think that it's already a done deal. That is incorrect.
That is incorrect. We have I mull it over almost every day and get feedback from the public almost every day, and we're given until April 13th for people to email either me or Kevin Anson, and our information is at outdooralabama.com, and then I have to put together a proposal and forward it to the commissioner and to the advisory board.
All right. Then I want to, before we run out of time, jump to the reef. What is it called? The reef stamp or reef? What?
The reef fish endorsement.
Reef fish endorsement. What is that?
So it's a fee for participating in the reef fish fishery, and it's an effort to identify the number of people who are really participating in a reef fish fishery off the state of Alabama, and gives us the opportunity to survey them. But also the funding piece, the reason we had to do that was we lose some of our federal funding that we've used for the research in the reef zone, and there's so much value in that. As you see, triggerfish came out with the closure.
Yeah, I want to get into that, yeah.
Coming up sooner, and I know nobody's happy about that, but the research that we support has a triggerfish component to it. So we have some information on triggerfish that we think is very valuable and very important. So we want to continue that research, and that's what the fee is going to do, is going to help the research in the reef zone.
All right, so the $10 will go completely earmarked specifically for reef fish research. It won't go anywhere else.
That's correct. We will put it aside, and so it might fund, some fuel to go in the boat for the guys to go out there and do some things. But it's really
right.
It's all based on that reef fish fishery, either going to the Sea Lab and sponsoring their projects, or the things that we do in house. Will be transparent.
Would that be 2020? We're looking at that, or would it be this year?
It would begin in license year 2020, which the recreational angler license will change over at the end of August, and the commercial stuff will change in October.
All right. I know we only have about 90 seconds left before you got to go here, so run through those closures. Triggerfish closing earlier than thought, and then also we have a no-go for AJ.
Yes, and I'm waiting for my phone to blow up about those two. The triggerfish was based on average landings from previous years. That's how NOAA came to that determination. I spoke with them in person because there's not a management tool such as Snapper Check or anything like that. So they have to make an educated guess.
Because they don't know they're going to shut it down.
That's correct. So then that may make it better or worse for the fall season. So, and Amberjack was based on the previous landings. There is some survey data on that.
I mean, you know, I maybe in isolated places, but I know Mike talks about the number of AJ, and we.
Oh, they're just so overpopulated out there. We can't catch king mackerel. You try to troll around an oil rig or a sunk spot out there. You can't get close to them anymore. Used to, you could run a bait right by the leg of a oil rig and catch king mackerel. You can't even come close to an oil rig anymore without amberjack. So, as far as I'm concerned, is 10 times more amberjack than it used to be. But
what do I know?
I don't know nothing.
It's going to happen, and that's why I think, you know, ultimately if we can get to some more state-managed plans and where we control that reef zone, then some of those things will change. We can tailor seasons to match what the anglers of Alabama want, and we have very specific data based on that research I talked about under that reef fish endorsement that I think if we can move to state management in multiple species reef fish, I think we're going to be in good shape.
All right. I appreciate you carving out some time. I know you got a busy schedule this morning. We'll get you back on the show real soon.
Thanks, guys. You have a great weekend.
Thank you,
right,
Scott.
We'll do. Director of Alabama Marine Resources, that is Scott Bannon, joining us. So there is a quick down and dirty version of the things you heard talked about this last week on social media when it comes to fish regulations. We'll talk more about that when we get back right here on FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Glad to have you here on this Saturday, and we will get Director Scott Bannon back on soon to talk more in depth. He is in the middle of a meeting today, so he stepped out for us, which I appreciate.
Yep.
Listen, he is a couple different fronts here. We'll break it down piece by piece. Number one, let's talk flounder.
Yeah.
Okay, I think there's, I know there will be somebody out there that disagrees, but generally when I talk to fishermen, we say, flounder, we got an issue with flounder.
There is a problem with flounder. Now, I'll give you that. There is something going on with flounder that 10, 15 years ago, we had quite a few flounder. Now, something is happening.
And if y'all are asking this question in your head, Mike and I have asked it as well, and I've asked it of Director Scott Bannon, what about the oil spill? He said, we're very interested in that. He said, but our stats did show we were already showing problems with flounder populations before the spill.
Yeah.
He said it was already, we were already seeing decline. Which, by the way, too, on a side note, we didn't have time in this show, but we'll do it going forward. They are working, Alabama Marine Resources are doing breeding programs, breeding flounder right now to turn loose, stocking flounder.
Yeah.
If that's what we got to do to get things turned around, that's great. I hate the idea of having to stock fish. It makes me feel like we're in one of those states, you know what I'm saying? That's like where they've, where you got to put them in, put them in take. I mean, whatever it takes, I'm not against it. It's just, and they have to do it right now because they're trying to figure out what's happening with flounder. But I don't want to forever be living on the, we have to produce the fish to put in the water to take out. I love the natural systems to do their thing.
Well, I do too, but maybe it needs a little help right now.
Right, and right now, I agree. Yeah. I'm not anti it. I'm just saying, just like my long term, I'm like, man, shucks, you know?
Yeah.
But on the snapper front, he said, tell you what, and this is a conversation, I'm sure he'll back it up again on the air. I mean, there's nothing he's ever told me off the air that he wouldn't say on the air. He said, we're going to run whatever adjustments we do to commercial and recreational flounder. He said, let's run it for 5 years. He said, if we don't see that we're making a difference with that, and it's something else, some other component in the environment, he said, at that point, he said, I will be the strongest advocate for putting it back at whatever it was.
Yeah.
He said, we're trying to figure out what is going on before we have a bigger problem with the flounder.
Here's the problem with that. I mean, yes, and maybe he'll still be there 5 years
from now.
Yeah,
it might be,
might be somebody else in there that didn't realize that he said that and keep that forever.
But
you know,
but one of the things he's saying about reducing limits.
Once they take something away from you, a lot of times you never get that back, and that's my biggest fear of all this stuff.
The weird thing about the flounder on this one is, I'm going to say this, the commercial take is way bigger. You asked him.
Commercial take
is way bigger.
And I don't know what that number is, Sean, but
we'll
I think it's like 100 to 1.
I think you're probably right. Commercial take is way bigger. And but the other problem here, too, is that it's when you start talking about what you can do to limit it, you know, you start talking about the length limit, and I said, well, why wouldn't we do a creel limit first? You know, he's talking about making the length longer. And he said a good point. I don't know that I can argue with it. He said, who do you know that's catching a limit of flounder all the time?
Yeah.
He said, so I could change that limit. He said, it doesn't change anything.
Doesn't do anything. That's right.
He said, we got to put more. He said, we're putting more flounder back through the stocking program, and we need more released back in the system.
Yeah.
You know, lucky thing for me, the flounder fishing is so bad that, and I used to gig a lot, you know, back in my old, I used to gig, nighttime gig out of the boat a lot. I'm always too tired to do it now, and honestly, in my trout fishing, which I do a lot, I probably keep two or three flounder a summer.
Yeah,
catch a good flounder that I keep. That's it.
Yeah,
that's it, and it's because the fishing's tough.
Yeah,
so we got to figure out whoever is taking the most there to limit that to see what can be done. Okay, there's flounder. I think that's the easiest of the subjects to get agreement on. The middle one here, I'll say, is speckled trout. Now you heard this is all I'm clarifying. It's not that the people said it's five fish and 22-inch upper slot. That's not that it's untrue. It's that is one of the many proposals out there. None of these are in concrete. That is why they're having these series of meetings where people have been voicing it. I was one of those people that when I first heard about this, the upper end didn't bother me as much. And I'm going to let you talk about this too because I know once something's taken away, it's not given back. And I get that. And I'm being selfish because personally on my boat, we just don't kill a lot of big trout. And
right.
We do. And I'll tell you, we catch some pretty good trout every summer.
Sure.
But we don't kill a lot of them because I see them as breeding machines. Like, I don't want to go eat that big trout. And if it's not big enough that I'm going to mount it or I'm in a tournament. But then again, I also realize that's right for me.
That doesn't mean it's right for you.
Right? That's kind of how – that's the way my brain works in politics all week long on the other show.
Yeah.
You know, that I said things. So I haven't, me personally, that makes complete sense, but maybe it doesn't make sense for you. They're looking at what they can do to help the speckled trout populations. You know, it's, I don't know that they're not, I mean, trout fishing seems all right to me, but they're looking
pretty healthy to me.
But they're looking at different stats. But I would say there's always anomalies too, because look at this year. What did not happen this year? We talked about it last week with Captain Eric Nelson.
Right.
That the causeway fishing, the fall fishing was a zero. Very limited. I mean, a few guys got a few days here and there. But the usual speckled trout royale beatdown that happens in October and November along the causeway that I'm raising my hand, I'm a component in that, did not happen this year.
How many, on a good year on the causeway, I mean, I know it's hard to estimate.
Right.
How many speckled trout do you think get caught when it's good fishing on the causeway?
Right. When it's bird schools and do-nothing drifts.
How many do you think?
How many get caught or kept?
Because
you'd say the average number of people keeping 10 fish. Is it in the tens of thousands or is it in the thousands? I don't know. You know, is it 8,000, 9,000, 10,000?
Yeah. This year there was none caught. So that should.
Those kind of things, right. Those kind of things ripple through the system. And maybe in a year or two, all of a sudden there's a real good age class of fish because we didn't work them over so hard in the fall.
Right.
So I don't know. I mean, this would be interesting. It's not set in stone. I don't mind the fish we like to keep usually on my boats from about 15 inches to 19 inches.
That's right. That's the best eating fish.
That's the best eating fish. Yes. Those fit best in my skillets. You know, that's the kind we like to keep. But that doesn't mean it's right for other people. I will say, whatever they do, the law, I'll just preach from what I believe. I believe if you have no reason to keep those big fish for food and you're not going to mount them, turn the big girls loose.
Yeah.
You've got a Drummond trout, a male trout, and he's big, keep them. But if it's female, turn them loose.
Yeah, let you at least keep one for tournaments.
And that's what he's saying. But that's not even in stone yet.
But there's a lot of people, Sean, that don't go out. They don't speckle trout fish all the time, you know. Not like a pro, you know, that's going to go catch a limit every day. I mean, they just want to go out and catch
four, five, six speckled
trout, and they might be the limit's 14 inch right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they might not catch, but two or three, a trip, maybe.
Okay, well, one of the arguments that
they want to keep those.
And I agree that Scott had made in the past, though, he said, and I, from things I've read in the past, I think what he's saying is true. It's true that he said in a year's time, 2 years time, 14 becomes 16. In other words, if you let all those 14, then the numbers of fish that are 14s, 16s will be like that too. And I get it. The thing I want to work against, there's so many different opinions, and everybody has a valid take on this. Well, most people who are consumers of this have a valid take, and we see it different ways. I fight to keep the creel limit at 10 and no reduction because I see most people don't get to go all the time. And I would like that family or whomever who gets on a good trout bite, they may go twice, three times a year, four times a year trout fishing. They get on that good trout bite. You know, if it's dad and the two kids or mom, if they end up keeping 40 trout that day, they only go two or three times a year.
Yeah.
And they may only get the good bite that one day. I like them to get the fish, to have the fish fry, if they want to freeze the fish, those kind of things. As long as they use the resource, I'm for it. I think I want to keep the creel. I'd rather take a corner off the card somewhere else than the creel limit. Now, with flounder and stuff, it doesn't bother me. With speckled trout, I'd rather do what we can to keep the limit at 10. And if that means the only way to get agreement is go 16 inches and 10 fish, I would rather have...
Or 15, maybe.
I would,
15
okay,
inches.
And that's probably... Okay.
1 inch, I mean, yeah. 15
okay,
inches.
So you
we
say
don't
fit.
Have to go to 16, 17, 18.
No, they're not going to go that high.
Well,
yeah,
I'm
he
just
doesn't.
Saying, if you do anything, go to 15.
Okay, and that's maybe what it is. But I would, I would rather see... This is just me, and we all have different... I would rather be 10 fish at 15 or 16 inches than 5 fish at 14.
Absolutely.
Because I want those people, once they do get on the bite, because quite often in the south end of the bay where I fish, and not in the marsh, but in the south end of the bay where I fish around the island, there are days you get in the dinks, but usually you don't throw a lot of fish back.
Yeah.
I mean, even on a dink bite, when we'll have a dink bite, some of the stuff we do over the next month or two, one out of three I throw back. One out of three is 13 inches. Now, there's some places I can go that you're going to catch small fish, but all right, so there's the trout thing we'll discuss.
But here's the deal, Sean. I've been fishing in the Gulf of Mexico all my life, mm-hmm. and I have seen this thing go from just wonderful fishing to dead gum. It's still great fishing, but you can't catch them anymore.
Well, you can't keep them.
You can't keep them anymore. I am fed up with all that. I don't want them to change nothing about nothing anymore. I am so anti-change anything anymore because I've seen what's happened. You know, once they take one little thing away from you, they never, ever give it back to you. You know, are we going to be two-snapper fishing for the rest of our life, it looks like? We're never going to get three or four or five back again. Right. And we all know there's so many snapper out there, it's unbelievable. Talking about the amberjack a while ago, you know, they don't go fishing, I guess, because amberjack are just everywhere out there.
And so are the triggers, and the triggers are close early.
So I'm against it. I'm against it all. As far as I'm concerned, don't take nothing away, period, from me ever again.
But there's two things going on here, and this is, we're going to run out of time. We're going to have to do this on next week's show. There's speckled trout and flounder discussion and this reef stamp, the reef endorsement, $10 fee. That is the responsibility of Scott Bannon and the state. That's, you can take your beef with them.
Yes.
Snapper, trigger, amberjack, they're just having to play ball with the feds. So there's two different
battles. That's still a government entity taking something away from you.
I don't know anybody who'll pick up the phone and talk to me with the feds. Yeah. State guys will.
Yes, I do like that. I mean, you know, we're more personal, and I believe the state would do the right thing. But I'm so anti because I've seen what the feds do that I'm anti everything now, you know, just from my seeing what's happened to our fishery.
All right. For Captain Cranky and Sean Sullivan.
Don't get me mad.
We'll be back next week and hopefully have some more turkey stories for you. Hopefully,
I hope so. I hope you have some really good turkey stories.
I do, too. Yep. I do, too. All right, we'll see you all next week. Prep Sports Report on the way next.